Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome into another edition of the Gig'em 24/7 Sports Podcast. I am Andrew Hattersley, joined by Carter Carls. Thrilled to be here with you guys. On the eve of Texas A&M's maroon and white spring game, the first spring under Mike Elko is nearly in the books, and we're gonna do a little something a little fun today. We're gonna take a position by position breakdown of the roster, where things stand, what we've learned now that we've had the chance to see quite a bit of this this roster and this new look roster in a lot of ways. So, Carter, how you doing, buddy? How's everything been going?
Good, but not as good as you, man. Getting married. I know. Honeymoon in St. Lucia, birthday. You got jury duty coming up, so it's kind of bringing you back down to earth. But been a cool month for you, huh?
I know. It has been a really cool month, and thanks for all the well wishes that I've gotten over on the site. It's some good jokes, too. I know people are having a lot of fun in that running visitor list, and I got a good chuckle out of those. But, no, it's been a fun couple of weeks, and obviously having the wedding and getting some time to kind of enjoy that. The folks in St. Lucia were wonderful. Saw a couple Aggies when I was down there too. Saw a couple folks down there from College Station and one person that went to Texas A&M. So a lot of fun being down there and was kind of keeping tabs on how things were going. And obviously a good couple of days on the recruiting front for Mike Elko and that staff with Marcus Garcia, Houston Longstreet, then Connor Carty. They're heating up on the recruiting trail. I think they were just waiting for the chance to kind of the chance to see this team in action, and that did the trick for a lot of these guys. I've heard a lot of very positive reviews coming out of spring practices, and just the style and the way that this coaching staff works with players. They've really made a big impression, and it's led to some results on the recruiting trail. So. What have been your impressions getting out there? You've been out there quite a bit at during the media viewing portions. What has been your impression of these first 14 practices?
Yeah, well, we'll get in position by position, but just kind of broadly speaking, this was a spring practice that was really centered around competition, bringing in 30 newcomers, 22 from the portal, 8 from the 2024 class. Position groups like the offensive line, position groups like cornerback, safety, they brought in a lot of guys to compete for jobs. You're already seeing some of the guys who, didn't really see the path to starting role, like Derek Graham or Alex Howard, who arrived in January, and they said, I'm not going to get that starting role, so I'm going to head out here in the spring portal window. So, you've seen some of that already, but Been good to see. I mean, you compare it to last spring. I mean, they had like 50 scholarship players for a lot of practices healthy to kind of compete. And you know, a lot of guys sitting out. And in this practice, you've got guys who are hurt who are practicing. We'll mention Connor Wigman in a little bit. But guys are pushing through things. And, you know, another thing is just the tempo and the organization of the practices I really like. I find myself watching the DB's coach, Ishmael Aristide, because he's all about tempo. He's all about efficiency. If you're lollygagging, he'll make you do up-downs. This seems to be more of a focus this spring. Everybody, it's a big, you know, emphasis to get lined up correctly, get on the field fast, show up on time for, you know, lifting weights or eating together for breakfast and dinner. There's just a lot more of a team-oriented mindset there that I don't think was there last year. But, yeah, you see that a lot with new coaches, how long it lasts. You know, you'll see. We'll see. But to have so many newcomers and to kind of already establish a culture that looks to be much improved compared to last year, I think it's pretty impressive for Mike Elko.
No doubt. And just looking ahead before we get into the position by position breakdown, looking ahead to this Maroon and White spring game, what are some big things that you're looking for in this game? I know Mike Elko was kind of asked about, you know, what would define like a successful spring game. And he kind of made the point that, you know, a negative play on one end is a bad play for the offense and a touchdown for the offense is a bad play for the defense. So he doesn't really look at it, you know, it's a win for one side. I think he joked, like, as long as Texas A&M wins. But just what would you define as, like, a successful spring game, and what are some big things you're looking for?
Well, first off, I think what you want to see, like, based off what Elko was talking about, you don't want to see dumb mistakes. You don't want to see pre-snap penalties and guys blowing coverages. If you see a good play, you want it to be because the player's making a great play, not because the other guy messed up. So I think that's kind of the big thing generally that coaches want to look for.
Yep.
For me, you know, a lot of storylines with this, obviously an extended look at a lot of these newcomers. I mentioned O-line and the defensive back group being two groups that have a lot of competition there. You're going to see guys like B.J. Mays and Will Lee and Donovan Saunders and just a lot of cornerbacks in that group that are competing for starting time. Offensive line, we've heard a lot about Armaj Reed Adams out of Kansas. So, like, Cyrus Allen, wide receiver, there's a lot of newcomers that you're going to see that you might say, who's that? Who's number six in the maroon? I'm not sure who that is. So, I think that'll be good to see them. Obviously, Connor Wigman, how healthy does he look? How polished does he look? That'll probably be one of the big storylines. What does the offense look like under Colin Klein? Just the scheme and what they want to do. You know, spring games tend to be a little bit more vanilla than what you're accustomed to seeing, but there are still some things that you can take and learn from them. But, yeah. Let's just dive into the position groups.
Yeah, let's start with the quarterbacks your thoughts on what you've seen from obviously Connor Wigman, Jalen Henderson, and Marcel Reed a little bit.
Yeah, with Connor Wigman, it's been a bit of a rocky spring for him, which I don't think was totally surprising. He's not 100% healed from the broken bone he suffered in his left foot last September, which required a surgery. And that wasn't the expectation, that he'd be healed up and that he'd, you know, be good to go this spring. Obviously, he's healthy enough to stand and move and, you know, jog and things like that. But it can cause him discomfort. He's got it heavily taped up. And while it's fully healed, it's not fully, you know, 100%, if you will. So it's one of those things where, like, I don't think him being out there is an injury risk, because I wouldn't think that A&M would put him out there if there was a major risk. And he's obviously not getting hit either. And their kind of goal with him this spring was, hey, let's not have him running around. And so, you know, it's one of those things where I really respect the guy for going out there and competing for every practice. He's been out there for every practice throwing. He's in both scrimmages throwing. It hasn't looked great at times. We've seen him in one full practice. We've heard from other folks that have watched him practice. You know, the concern for him still is kind of that deep ball, that deep post, right? Like we saw him struggle with that last year where he's putting too much air on it or he's putting not enough air on it. He just doesn't quite have the timing right. He's not able to fully plant that left foot yet, just from what it appears like. But again, is there concern there? I don't think you can have concern there unless he shows up in preseason camp and it's looking like that again. I think the expectation is by preseason camp, he'll be 100% good to go. It has been almost 7 months since he suffered that injury. So, you know, I think it's safe to say that it was a significant injury. 7 months and you're not fully healed, that is significant. And so for him, my question is, not being 100% for so long, not being able to have the right mechanics that you want to have, not running around as much as you may used to or are used to doing, does that stunt your development at all? Does that hinder you? I mean, again, it hasn't looked pretty at times for him, but I'm not concerned yet because I think that it was kind of an expected result for him. So for him, when he comes out there tomorrow, it may not look great. He may have some bad throws. When he's thrown it deep, it may not look right. But I don't know if you can sound the alarms and be overly worried yet unless it just looks absolutely terrible. I don't think it will. I think he's fine. He's obviously proven he's got the talent. He's proven that he's the best guy in that room. I think he's your starting quarterback against Notre Dame. It's just seeing where he's at, projecting where he'll be. You don't want to get too Twitter doctory, but you do want to kind of keep it in mind of like, hey, this guy still is coming off a significant injury and he's got a lot to, you know, a lot of ground to make up.
No doubt. And, you know, looking at the running back spot, what have you kind of seen from that group? Obviously some familiar faces there and Le'Veon Moss and Ruben Owens and Amari Daniels. And you've got EJ Smith in there as well. What have you kind of seen from that group?
Yeah, it's a group I still have questions with. No running back in that group has had more than 600 yards in a season. I don't know if that will happen this season. It seems like Colin Klein's pretty content with having a running back rotation. We asked him about it. He said, you know, that idea of the workhorse running back is kind of a thing of the past, that, you know, unless you have a guy that's just absolutely dominant, you may not have that workhorse kind of guy. So I think they're going to use these guys. The question with this group, with the three backs that came back, Amari Daniels, Le'Veon Moss, Ruben Owens, they really struggled in pass protection last year, and they all three showed flashes, but they couldn't quite sustain it. You know, Amari Daniels was kind of the guy at the beginning of the year. Le'Veon Moss took over a couple games, maybe in the middle of the year, and then Ruben Owens, you know, certainly had his moments. EJ Smith, he's been banged up for a lot of the spring. I think he'll be out there participating in the game tomorrow, but injuries have been the big concern for him. I think he may be your best pass blocker out of the group. He's got a lot of experience, but the guy can't stay healthy. So that's kind of my big question with him. I think the group is good, not great. And I think it may, you know, depend on the next step that some of these guys take. You know, we've heard great things about Ruben Owens this offseason. It seems like he's put on weight. He's always had the ability from the standpoint of breaking off long runs. And I think he's a great, great pass catcher. I think he's the best receiving back out of the group. The thing with him, though, is he's got to do a better job of falling forward and getting the extra yards when they may not be there easily for him. You know, when there's a wall in front of you and you can kind of bury your head and push forward for 3 or 4 yards, he needs to do that because we've seen him where he'll get hit right at the line of scrimmage and he just kind of falls down. And so I think that's the step for him, to be an every down back, getting the 3 or 4 yards when it's tough is the question for him, because he's got all the talent. It's just, I think him gaining that weight, getting that strength will help him get to that point. But you know, we obviously got to see it. So a good group, not a great group from my mind. If there is an elite running back in the portal that you could add, I wouldn't mind it. You know, Damian Martinez out of Oregon State was a guy I mentioned. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of mutual interest there. I don't know if A&M is really feeling about, you know, prioritizing running back in the portal, but it's a position group where they got to take a step forward, because none of those guys have proven yet that they're elite.
No doubt. And then we're going to head to two, I think, intriguing position groups from that probably saw the most turnover change in the offseason, starting at the wide receiver room. Obviously, a tough news there with Jabri Barber, expected to miss some significant time, according to Max Zenitz, after suffering, you know, a foot injury. Just what have you seen from that room, and where do you think that group kind of stands right now?
According to me, by the way, I put it out there in a story, and then Matt kind of had it later, but I didn't put it in my own story, so that's kind of on me. But yeah, for him, I think he's probably going to miss the very beginning of the season.
Yeah,
it's one of those injuries where the timetable's a little fluid. You know, he could be out the first 3 games. He could be out first 6 games. You know, you don't really quite know. So I don't want to, like, give a firm timetable on it. What we do know, though, is it is a significant injury. It did require a surgery on his foot. So it's a big loss for A&M, because not only were they kind of thin at the receiver group, but he was expected to be a pretty nice receiver for him last year. I wrote a story about, you know, him, got to talk to him when he committed to A&M, and he was a yard short from 1,000-yard season at Troy last season, and he was expected to be one of the top 3 or 4 receivers for this team. He was going to be the top punt returner for this team, kind of taking over for Anaya Smith. And so it's some production to replace for them, but I still really like this receiver group from the top group standpoint. I think Noah Thomas is somebody who, when you just look at him on the field and the catches that he can make in traffic, and the red zone threat that he can become, that guy has number one receiver potential. The key for him is just to stay healthy. Last season, he really pushed. He was kind of like Trey Zune in 2022, where, you know, you might say, he didn't do that much. But you're like, well, the guy had a torn this, a torn that, a torn this, a torn that, right? Like he was
battling through some stuff.
Cyborg, yeah. And so now that he's fully healthy, can he stay healthy? If he can, he could be the best receiver for this group. I think he is the best receiver from this group. The other two, though, all of them are capable of taking over any game. Jahdae Walker, last 6 games of last season, he was phenomenal. Key for him is, can he catch the ball, right? He had a lot of drops last season. Moose Muhammad, elite talent. We've seen him. We've seen the one-handed grabs that he makes. But the question for him, does he know how to get lined up? Does he know how to run the routes? Is he showing up the things? And just, you know, is there sort of
some
a
– little things.
Yeah, the little things. We'll see him at practice doing up-downs from time to time. It's okay, you know. Is he in good standing, right? And so once you've been 4 years into this, you can't kind of blame Jimbo and things. It's kind of on you on whether you can take that next step. So I don't know if this group has a number one guy, but they've got solid number twos at the very least in 3 guys. And any of them could take over any game. Moose, Jahdae, and Noah can all have 100-yard games in any game. And that may be enough. If you can get an elite receiver, you know, Keandre Lambert-Smith out of Penn State is a guy that they're looking at. I've been talking to some folks in Samuel Brown's camp at Houston. I know they're trying to set up a visit. He had 800 yards last season. There are some options they're looking at in the portal. I think they're going to end up bolstering this group. But you like the top three guys. Cyrus Allen is another guy who brings a lot of speed, a lot of production out of Louisiana Tech last year. I think he'll be among that top group. But it's a good group. I'd say it's pretty good, but I don't know if it's elite. And they've got to add the numbers there, and they may need to find that elite option that can lead the group.
No doubt, no doubt. But intriguing nonetheless. And obviously then you got guys like Micah Tease, right? And mixing him into the mix and seeing and then some younger players as well to kind of see if they take a step forward. And then we switch over to the offensive line. And this is probably the group that'll have the most eyeballs on them on Saturday, and the group that probably needs to take the biggest jump. Still feels like, and Mike Elko kind of said this earlier this week, they're still mixing and matching quite a bit to see what's kind of the best combination there. You know, you look at Trey Zun, obviously feels like he could be the potential leader of that group. But outside of Trey Zun, what else have you kind of seen? Because, you know, it's an intriguing group, to say the least.
I like this group more than I've liked them since probably the 2020 season. And they're not the 2020 group. Don't mix that up. That group was special. 2021, they're okay, but you know, Jameer Johnson, pretty rough. But you know, last couple of years, it's been bad, really bad.
Yeah.
And there's been reasons for that I think that they've fixed. Tackle, you know, in the past, they didn't have quite the depth. They didn't have the guys there. Last year, they had Chase Basanis there. I mentioned Jameer Johnson a couple of years ago. They were playing Trey Zun at left tackle, even though he had 17 injuries in 2022. Well, this year, I think Trey Zun is a guy that can be a draft pick caliber guy. I don't know how high of a draft pick, but he could be one of the better offensive tackles in the SEC, I think, at left tackle. Right tackle, you finally got Reuben Fothery back, and I think that's huge. I think this guy was playing at a super high level in the 2021 season as a true freshman. Had an okay 2022 season, and then 23, he had that injury that kind of kept him out for most of the year, and they had to put Chase Basanis there. Well, you may have fixed two problems, because – you're putting Reuben Fothery at right tackle, and you're also moving Chase Basanis to guard, which is his more natural position. And they lost Layden Robinson last year. I think they may upgrade their right guard and their right tackle positions, because I think Basanis at guard, like Layden Robinson did not play well last year. I think Basanis could be better than Layden was last year. And right tackle, whether it's Fothery or Crownover, they're going to be better than what Basanis was last year. And then you think that Zun will be better, right? Center can't get much worse than what they got last year. And left guard, it was kind of a circus between – or not circus, a merry-go-round between Mark Nabu and Cam Dewberry. And Cam Dewberry was hurt the whole year. That was another Trey Zun kind of situation where, you know, he had an injury upper body that, you know, wasn't very effective. We saw how effective he can be at the end of the 2022 season. The 23, he was hurt. So I think they could take a step forward across the board. And they also added some guys that are, you know, starting to compete. Armaj Reed Adams, I think, could be a starting guard for this team. I think you feel good about Zun starting. I think Basanis will probably be one of the starting guards. I think that right tackle is going to be between Fothery or Crownover. Crownover can play left or right. Fothery can play left or right. So I think you have good depth at left and right tackle. I know they want to add one from the portal, but I think they're good there. And then interior, yeah, I mentioned Basanis is probably starting. I think right now Armaj Reed Adams might be a favorite to start. Center, Mark Nabu, Bryce Foster. You got 15 starts over Foster, or 15 practices of reps over Foster, who was with the track field team this spring. Could Nabu surpass Bryce Foster, or may they go in the transfer portal? You know, I wrote last week that they're looking at centers in the portal. They're hosting one who started 8 games for Utah last season. So I just think there's a lot more options. There's depth. And I think every position group across the board could take a step forward there.
No doubt. And that'd be welcome news. And I think that would just have kind of that trickle effect into the rest of the roster as well. Real quick, tight end. What have we kind of seen from that group so far?
Tight end's another group where I don't know if you're going to get elite production from them this season, but I think that they have done a decent job with their work in the portal. They added Garrett Miller from Purdue, pretty experienced guy, struggled with injuries, but he's kind of your more blocking tight end. Trey Watson out of Fresno State played with Jalen Henderson there. He's more of your receiving options, quick and athletic kind of guy, had almost 400 yards last season. He's someone that I think could be maybe the best receiving option from the group. But Donovan Green is the one that I'm really curious into seeing. Yeah. His growth this offseason. Tore his ACL during preseason camp last August. He's actually been out there at practice in a yellow jersey. He's not fully practicing, but he's running around doing some things. I think that's awesome. I think, in the past, those guys just wouldn't even get any reps at all coming off injury from practice. But now, they're out there and they're learning the system and learning the plays and getting good work. So he's someone though that coming off such a major injury, can he be as effective? I thought he was great his true freshman year. I thought he had a real chance to be the alpha of the group last year. Comes down with the injury. Can he be that alpha that we thought he would be? Thor, Theo Mellon-Ostrom's another guy who he's just so big that, man, if he ever figures it out, he could be awesome just because that guy has such elite size. And I don't know if he's going to be the elite option out of that group. I still think Green and Watson may be your top guys. But Thor's another guy to watch. Just I think he's someone that they really like. And I think Colin Klein's going to be using a lot of tight ends in his offense. So you're going to see a lot of these guys on the field.
No doubt, no doubt. Well, we're gonna switch gears and touch on the defense when we get back after a quick break. So stay right with us.
Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back into the Gig'em 24/7 Sports Podcast. I am Andrew Hattersley, joined again by Carter Carls, continuing our position by position breakdown of the roster after getting to see this team for a significant portion of spring practice in the Marino White spring game on Saturday. Obviously, looking at that defensive line, obviously a really good group with Nick Scarton, DJ Hicks, Gabriel Brown-Lodindy, just a ton of talented pieces there, just to name a few. Just what's been your thoughts getting to see this group in action?
This defensive end group is so freaking good. It's pretty scary. I mean, just seeing them at practice before they even move, you're like, oh, that's a big group. But like, they're just full of guys that either, you know, they're elite because they've done it before, or you've liked what you've heard and you've liked what you've seen and you think they can take a step forward. So like, for instance, Shamar Turner and Nick Scorton, you know, those guys are elite defensive ends, defensive linemen. Shamar Turner may play some D tackle. We'll see. That's kind of the big question with him, but both were second team all conference last year. Nick Scorton led the Big Ten in sacks last year. I think he'll be the best player on this team. If I had to pick one, but having those two guys, I think Shamar Stewart has taken a big step forward. Just looks a lot more quick and a little bit more bulky compared to last season. And I think, you know, the thing with him has been more, you know, he's such a big dude. Can he get to the quarterback? Can he finish, you know, those plays? That was kind of the question with Shamar Turner going in the 23 season. You have all this size. You're so physically imposing. But are you quick enough? Are you fast enough to get to the quarterback, bring him down, get six to eight sacks in a season? I think Stewart getting to that level that Turner was getting to last season. Cassius Howell, you know, he's kind of under talked about just because he comes from Bowling Green, but he tied for the lead in the MAC for sacks last season. And he's an impressive athlete. He's more of your pure rusher. You know, Scorton, Stewart, Turner, those guys are 280, 290 pound guys. Cassius Howell, I don't know his exact weight off the top of my head, but it's way less than that. He is more of your pure rusher. And then you got guys who you're just intrigued by, like Malik Silla, Inai White, Ryland Kennedy. Those are all three guys that are just exceptionally athletic. They're starting to get more filled out. They're your skinnier types that have gotten more filled out. And once they figure it out, man, what players could they become? But I still think the top four guys are, you know, Howell, Turner, Scorton, Stewart, in no order there. D tackles the question for me. They just don't have size there. They've got two guys who are above 300 pounds, at least listed on the online roster. Albert Regis, about 320 pounds, 315. And Samu, I'm going to butcher his last name.
Taramana Pepe.
There you go. That are over 300. And you need an SEC, you need 320, 330 pound nose guard kind of guys. Regis, I don't think, is a starting caliber player. Samu, I just don't think he's going to see the field this season. I don't think he's quite ready for that. I think he still has a ways to go from a strength and conditioning standpoint. Maybe he can play a few plays a game, but I don't see it there. I think what they may do is they may bring Shamar Turner inside and try to do a Turner and Hicks kind of duo. But just my opinion, I think Shamar Turner, don't fix what's broke. Don't create two problems, right? Like, you can accept that you might not be amazing at D tackle, but don't move a guy from a position where he's awesome. Like, I just strengthen a strength. You've got a guy who can have 10 sacks in the SEC and another guy who can have 10 sacks in the SEC. You could be pretty dang good if you have him and Scorton off the edge. Might be a hot take, but obviously you could move him inside for third and long situations, but I just, he did so well last year. I don't know if you want to ruin that. We've seen that happen before with this defense where they've moved some bigger DNs inside and hasn't quite worked out. So I just kind of am cautious with that, but they do need to add at that position in the portal. D tackle, I really do like DJ Hicks. I think he's got all the makings of an elite defensive tackle. Lewis Johnson out of Wisconsin brings a lot of experience out of the Big Ten. Started 20 or so games for the Badgers. But, again, I just think the numbers there, the dudes they have there, they got to help out that group a little bit and add to it. Gabriel Brownlow Dindy, I've always been high on him. I've always liked what I've seen from him on the field. But he has an issue with injuries. He's been banged up all spring. He's been banged up for most of his career so far. When we see him, he seems to be pretty dang good. Seems to be as good as advertised. Yeah. Can he stay healthy is kind of the big question. Yeah.
No doubt. Health has got to be the big question mark there. And we have seen, obviously, and we'll dive into this a little more after the spring, but that is a position that A&M has offered some guys in the portal, has expressed some interest. So you can see they're still kind of maybe looking to add a guy or two there to kind of round out that group. Turning, switching gears a little bit, heading a little bit back of the defense to the back seven, looking at the linebackers, impressions of that group. Obviously, Torian York's kind of the leader of that room right now, was voted a team captain for the spring game. But what else have you kind of seen there around him?
Well, first with York, just being named a captain, and the kid's still 18 years old. He's still in his freshman year of college. That is crazy.
Wild. Just
about last year, he's a three-star recruit and kind of a nobody, right? Like in relative terms compared to all the other four and five-star recruits this team has gotten over the last few years. What a story from that kid. And he has really become one of the top leaders in the locker room. Mike Elko talked about, you know, we've got guys in from California to Florida to New Jersey who are, you know, people from all walks of life are voting for this guy for captain. It speaks volumes. And so you love what you hear. The big thing with him is he had the luxury of playing behind McKinley Jackson and Walter Nolan. He had the luxury of playing next to Edgerrin Cooper. Could be a lot more challenging to play when you're not surrounded with such elite talent. So can he stand out? Can he be, you know, can he continue on the trajectory he's on despite not having as much as the help is kind of the thing? Because if he does continue that trajectory, you're talking about one of the better careers in recent memory for an A&M linebacker. To come in as a true freshman, be that productive and continue it, that could really set the stage for a brilliant career for him. Beside him, that's obviously been the biggest storyline this spring. Who will emerge from that group? Now, Alex Howard came in. I thought he was more of a middle linebacker. He was kind of your 235-pound old-school linebacker, not as fast, not as great laterally. So I think he would have been Torian York's backup if he had stayed. Scooby Williams is the guy they brought in from Florida. He really struggled last year, and I don't think he's shown enough this spring to inspire a lot of confidence. But Damian Sanford's been kind of the revelation from the group.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. The guy has all of the physical traits. York is more of your instinctive, tough linebacker. Sanford is more of your athletic, you know, 40-inch vertical, 4.5 kind of speed guy who, you know, may not be as physically, like, strong and all that as York, but he's going to be more athletic sideline to sideline, and can get to the ball a little bit quicker. So he's someone you can kind of cut loose. I don't know if he's going to be the starter. I think he's the favorite right now. But A&M is looking at the transfer portal at the linebacker position to add experience and depth there. Maybe they add one, maybe they add two. Depending on who they get, that could be your next starting linebacker next to Torian York. But if they don't get a great guy there, I think it's going to be Damian Sanford game one.
Yeah, Solomon DeShields could be one guy to watch there from West Virginia, transfer linebacker will be on campus this weekend for the spring game. So that could be one name to watch there. And they're just rounding out this defense overall. And I think just the way the game is going overall, it's smart to kind of lump in cornerback, safety, defensive back room, because you're going to see probably some interchangeable nature there. Just what's been your impressions of the secondary so far?
Well, I think the most encouraging thing has been the move for Bryce Anderson going from nickel to safety. Nickel never really fit him. We had such high expectations for him last year because the kid is an exceptional athlete who can just really explode to the ball. He's so good laterally. He just never really showed it at nickel. Couldn't quite be effective. Didn't have a lot of standout plays. I think there's a reason for that. It's because he doesn't fit at that position. He's more of a safety, and he's put on a little bit of weight this offseason. And just from everything we've seen and heard, it seems like it's been a great fit for him. Now, whether he can become an all-SEC player, that remains to be seen. But it's great to know that he's in his best position. There's still a learning curve for him, being a former quarterback in high school, moving to defense. Obviously, he played a little defense in high school, but it wasn't like extensive reps. So that's something that he's continuing to kind of learn and grow with. I like the safety group. You look across the board. Trey Jones has been hurt all spring. He's practiced a little bit, but he had an injury last year that he's still kind of recovering from. He's your more big physical safety at a Central Michigan. 220, 215 pound kind of guy, definitely stands out from just a physically imposing standpoint. You got Marcus Radcliffe out of San Diego State, started for them as a true freshman last season, and he's got a lot of range and length to him. He's 6'3", 210, seems a little lighter than that. He's kind of skinnier on the skinnier side, but he might have the biggest wingspan of the entire team. And my question for him is, can he tackle? Can he take the big hits? Can he deliver the punishment? But you definitely see the range that the kid has, the length that the kid has, and you can see that there's something there. Dalton Brooks is one of my favorite younger players, just an incredible athlete. He's another one of those guys where you're like, man, where do we put him? Is he a nickel? Is he a safety? Could he play offense? But I think with just his athleticism, once he figures it out at the position that makes sense for him, which I think is safety, he could be a special player. A cornerback is kind of flavor of the day. One guy may impress one practice. One guy might impress the other. Seems like the top two guys right now among the transfers are Will Lee and B.J. Mays. B.J. Mays, question with him. He's had a lot of pass interference and holding penalties over the last couple of years. Can he clean that up? Been a little handsy when you watch him in practice, but he does have the talent to be a starting cornerback, I think, for the Aggies. Will Lee, with him, bigger cornerback. Can he hang with the super fast receivers is the thing with him, super quick receivers. Made some big mistakes for K-State last year. By the end of the season, they weren't extremely sad to see him go, but he did have his moments. He was the highest graded player on PFF for them last year. So I think with the experience he brings, being a full-time starter for K-State last year, he will be in that top group for A&M. Tyreek Chappelle, been a guy that they've moved around. Same with Bravion Rogers. He'll be outside. He'll be nickel. I think your two nickel options will be Tyreek Chappelle and Jaden Hill. Jaden Hill, based off the people I've talked to from Florida, they really liked him. When you ask the people at Florida about him, they're like, yeah, Scooby Williams, eh. But Jaden Hill's a player. That guy can play. And so I'm curious to see with Tyreek Chappelle where they see him fit, because – he could be a starting outside corner. He could be the starting nickel. It may be a matter of the situation, and it may be the matter of you know, getting your best three guys on the field. If you feel like Will Lee and BJ Mays are good enough, you could put Chappelle and start him at corner. If you think one of those guys, they may not be amazing, you could put Chappelle on the outside and you could start Jaden Hill at nickel. Obviously, Des Ricks is another guy who you got to give a long look to because he's a former five-star recruit, incredible athlete out of Alabama. Didn't get to play last year. He's been hurt all spring. We haven't seen much of him. I don't know if we'll see him in the spring game. So it's hard to make a judgment on him yet, but yeah. If he shows enough in preseason camp, yeah, maybe it's Des Ricks and Will Lee or Des Ricks and BJ Mays. Maybe Saunders ascends. There's a lot of options that you can go with there, but I love what they've done with that group. Terrible group last year, if we're being honest. Yeah. They really had the luxury last year of playing some bad offenses and some bad quarterbacks. But when they played good quarterbacks, good offenses, they got shredded. And so for me, the job they did replacing that group, getting experience, getting high ceiling guys like Des Ricks, you feel so much better about where this group is compared to last year.
No doubt, you really do. And that comes in the work that they've done in the transfer portal. There you have it, a position-by-position look at this Texas A&M roster, and we will certainly continue to break it down through the spring and the summer and what work A&M does in the transfer portal. A big thank you to everyone for joining us on this edition of the podcast. We'll be back next week to break down the spring game. Enjoy it on Saturday afternoon, getting a chance to get an extended look at this roster. Until then, see you guys soon, and have a great week.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.